Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. On the way to this conversation, we're going to be having this conversation, by the way, with people running for office along with others between now and election day, so you can hear their voices, not in debate, but in conversation about the future of the city and where they would be, where they think about the issues that we are facing at this moment. But before we get there, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ Baltimore's credit union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. You can all join us here at 410-319-8888. We're going to hit Port Covington. Or you can write us an email to talk@steinershow.org. Talk about what's happening with shootings and murders in our community and what our response should be. So do email us, talk@steinershow.org. Call us at 410-319-8888. We are joined by Joshua Harris, Green Party mayoral candidate. Joshua, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me.
Shannon Wright joins us. She is the Republican candidate for Baltimore City Council President.
Good morning.
Welcome to the program. And Ian Slocum is with us. He's Green Party candidate for the 12th District. Welcome to have you here.
So happy to be back.
And we'll have Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Greens all the way through Election Day here to talk about the issues that our city's facing. 410-319-8888. And as we speak, we got an email here from David Brown that Carl Stokes will be making a major announcement regarding the vote on the contentious $660 million Port Covington development deal. When we hear what that's about, we will let you know. As soon as we see that come over the transom, we'll let you know what he has said in that press conference. As we follow it, maybe one of my guests will get it up before I do. We'll find out. But 410-319-8888. Speaking of Port Covington, one of the things I said to you all before I went on the air was I found it really interesting that almost everybody who voted to push the vote to today and ensure the vote be taking place today on Port Covington tonight were city council members who will no longer be sitting on the city council, but will have either decided not to run or were defeated. But they all voted, let's push it through now. What is your take? Where would you be at this moment if you were in office? And talking about Port Covington, what would you be arguing on the city council? Josh, let me start with you since you're on the phone. We'll go around the room.
Well, thank you. I think that I've been pretty vocal about Port Covington and how it's not a fiscally sound decision for the city to make at this time. I believe that we need development in the city, absolutely. But should the city and the citizens finance development for a place that is not problematic, there's no one that lives there currently, and we have East and West Baltimore to be developed. And so I don't think that the city, this is a wise decision. It's not an equitable form of development. When we talk about what equity looks like in development, organizations like Equity Matters have done studies and do this work. And we have great people like Michael Scott, who's right here in Baltimore City, committed to doing this work equitably, who can advise and has spoken against it as well. And there's books and tons of information on what doesn't work. And so what we're about to do is only perpetuate poverty, racial disparity, and segregation in our city, in a city right now that really needs to be united more so than ever before and not further divided. And so Fort Covington is not the best decision. And so right now I will be postponing it as well. I would not be voting in favor to move forward with it until there were more details hashed out on what a comprehensive community benefits agreement that actually benefits the city as a whole truly looks like, and whether or not the city really can afford to put forth this amount of money and take out a municipal bond of this large, this size. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
Shen?
You know, development as a concept is always a good thing. It's how you grow your city. But the deal has to be balanced in that the residents of the city can actually benefit from it. And I'm a little bit unclear as to whether the pros outweigh the cons on this. You know, there's still more questions than answers. You know, we had attempted to have a town hall with some of the folks from Sagamore last week, and they canceled on us a couple of days before, apparently because of the hearings moving.
Who's the we?
Myself and some other candidates that were running. We thought that, you know, if transparency is to be how we would operate once elected, then let's do that now. Let's call folks out. Let's get people an opportunity to be able to ask their questions and get them answered. So that was our plan and our goal. And unfortunately, the folks at Sagamore canceled on us at the last minute. So I still have questions. And I do not think in good conscience anyone that does still have questions should vote for the city to spend the amount of money it needs to spend for this deal when there are so many areas that need to be addressed.
Ian?
And I think it's also...
Let me just jump to Ian. Josh, come right back to you. Ian.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty adamantly against Port Covington as it currently stands. The idea of spending this amount of money, public money, bond money, the money that we're going to be responsible for, money that erodes our tax base for a private project like this is, it's kind of insulting that they even came to Baltimore with this idea. I understand the reasons behind it. I understand the thinking behind it, but it's an outmoded, outdated way of thinking. I'm hoping we do hear from Carl Stokes pretty soon, because he's actually been out there with me at community association meetings, and he's even said cities like Chicago, like the state of California, they're considering doing away with TIFs entirely because it's just a really outdated way of doing urban development. It doesn't really work. The financial benefits are vague at best, and it allows the developer to then sell the land once they get the bond. So there's not really a clear path here for the city to prosper. You know, I do a lot of work with what's called community wealth building groups that actively organize like cooperatives and things like that. We live in Baltimore City, right? So we even had a football team just leave overnight. Businesses, corporations are not really responsible for the citizens in the city. So if Under Armour gets this giant amount of money, they have no responsibility to us here. They could just leave. And I do want to put this out there. You know, I think that the people that have been organizing and negotiating behind the scenes, like Build, like Working Families, like Carl Stokes himself, are doing a fantastic job, and I do trust them to get the best deal for the city. I just kind of question why this is happening so fast. Like, that was kind of our whole thing. I was down there protesting with them, with the folks over at Build and Working Families, like Jack Young, slow your roll, because why is this happening? Why do we need to do this right now? Why do we do this before the new city council takes place? And I share those questions. I share those concerns.
You were going to say what, Joshua?
I was going to say it's also still problematic, too, that right now we know that because of previous TIFs in the city, we're missing out on an estimated $25 million a year in education funding. This TIF is larger than all of those previous TIFs combined. So that means we would miss out on at least $25 million a year in school funding from the state. So can we afford to miss out on a total of $50 million minimum a year in education funding so that we can build a new playland on the other side of the harbor where nothing is right now but the grassy plains? Is that the best decision for us, the best way for us to use our money? And I'd say, no, it's not. Absolutely not. There's much better things that we can put our money towards. And when it comes to making sure that we're financing education and investing in ensuring that our children, our young people, have safe places to go to and that they can drink the water and that they have heat in the wintertime, this winter coming up, as we've seen, too, air conditioning in the summertime. Our schools don't have that. And we're going to miss out on another $50 million at least by moving forward with this deal before that has been dealt with on the legislative end, which won't begin to happen, or we won't begin to see anything until at least January.
So, folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. You heard Joshua Harris. He's running for mayor of Baltimore City on the Green Party ticket. Shannon Wright's running for president of city council on the Republican ticket. And Joshua and Ian Schlockman is Green Party candidate for the 12th District in our series of conversations with candidates about the future of our city. 410-319-8888 is a number, so please give us a shout. We want to have your thoughts in here as well, because this vote's taking place probably tonight on the city council.
Yeah, probably. And it's enormous, too. It would be the third largest TIF in the country. The amount of money wouldn't – I think you're not even scheduled to get the money back until like 35 years out or something like that. I mean, a lot of candidates get asked this question, you know, all the time, and my answer on it is always flat out no. I really take a very strong people before profit stance, and I don't understand why we're even getting this far with this vote. It really makes me question the intentions of some of those on city council that are pushing it so strongly.
Well, I think we're getting this far with the vote because the folks that are in the current leadership in Baltimore City don't have the correct concept in how to develop the city. You know, the thought is, if you make it pretty, people will come.
Well, not only that, but when you look at campaign finance reports and you see who's getting checks from what developers and what corporations, let's just be honest. Big money in politics is a major problem, not just on the national level, but on the local level, too. Some of these folks are looking to get jobs since they're wrapping up their council seats or their term on the council. Some of these folks are getting contributions to their campaign accounts directly. So knowing that big money in politics is a problem, even local. I mean, we're looking at a place where my opponent in the mayor's race was $200,000 in the hole at the end of the primary election and received several thousands of dollars from BGE employees. And so what does that say? That's who they end up working for when they get in office. And so I know myself as well as Ian are not taking donations from companies or corporations because we don't want to owe them. We want to owe the people of Baltimore. We don't want to work for BGE or for Under Armour, but for the citizens of Baltimore, take the time to make sure that we're putting forth the best possible deal for the citizens of Baltimore.
What were you in the middle of saying there, Shannon?
Yeah, you know, as a businesswoman, I understand the concept. My concern is not so much Sagamore, and I tell you why. In business, the concept is, finance what you need to do with other people's money, OPM. That's a concept that's been around for the longest time. The problem is when the leadership of the city seems to be abdicating their roles to be able to negotiate in the best interest of the residents of the city. We're sitting here talking about Port Covington, yet last week there was a hearing of increase in water bills that is just astronomic at one time. You've got crumbling infrastructure. You've got a consent order that the city is still under for the water. There are so many issues and things that need to be addressed in this city.
So some of the things that were talked about in this, and the Senate editorial came out, I think, today in favor of approving the Port Covington deal. And one of the things that they Bill went in saying, we want 51% of all the jobs being construction permanent jobs going to Baltimore City residents. They didn't get that. It was down to 30%. Mm-hmm. That 20% of the housing has to be affordable, but there's like five different definitions of that, but they don't even have to be in Port Covington. Right. It turns out now that they could build them in Westport, or they could build them in Cherry Hill. They could build them someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the unions are arguing that, the labor union in specific is arguing that these need to be union jobs at union wages. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of negotiating going on here, but the question is, what long-term is the city getting out of this, and what are the residents getting?
That's really what it comes down to. That's the question. You know, we've got schools that are in need of repair. We have economic issues in the city of Baltimore without Port Covington. And one of the best ways, long-term, generational, to be able to correct the issues with families and economics is education. We need to be focusing on that. We need to be focusing on future generations. And the best way to do that is schools. Fix our schools.
And Sharon's absolutely right. And education isn't just limited to K-12. So if our city council were serious about getting 51% of the jobs for Port Covington to go to Baltimore residents, on the previous TIF that I worked on and helped to get the community benefits agreement for, even though that wasn't the deal that we wanted, they would have included in that the endowment of the Poppleton Training Academy, which would train Baltimore residents in construction, green jobs, and hospitality and funnel them directly into apprenticeships if they were serious about getting jobs for Baltimore citizens. But they ignored that request, and they allowed the University of Maryland Biopark to walk away with $17.5 million in tax and criminal financing on that deal that will not comprehensively benefit the city either. So if they were serious about seeing Baltimoreans get jobs, they will put their money where their mouth was and invest in training and education of citizens to do the jobs that are available right now in Baltimore City.
And you make a good point, Josh. You make a very good point. See, when you look at things like those cute little phrases like market indicators and trends, you know what are the growing sectors in our economy. You know where the jobs are going to be. And if the leadership in this city was serious about leading this city to a better place, we would be starting to shift our focus towards training folks for jobs of the future, not jobs of the past, jobs of the future. You know where the markets are going. You know where the trends are. That's where we should be focusing on.
Proactive versus reactive.
Absolutely.
The whole way the whole Port Covington design, though, looks exactly like what Mayor Blake was looking to do in my area up in District 12, right by the train station, where, you know, there's this call to get young, wealthy families into Baltimore City, and they can't really what jobs are they going to be able to get that's going to be able to afford the lifestyle that she's trying to get people in the city to have, to be those upper class kind of citizens? It doesn't make any sense. So what you have is you have a bunch of people concentrated by the train station in Baltimore, by the Amtrak station, that are working out in D.C. or the suburbs of the D.C. area. Absolutely. Getting government jobs, because that's where those high paying jobs are, and they're tech focused and they're surveillance focused and all other kinds of crazy things we can get into. So those jobs just aren't really available within the bounds of the city. And I don't think the Port Covington project is going to fix that. I don't see like there's going to be a high tech industrial park or something like that that's going to somehow get those really, really high paying jobs in there. And even if they did, exactly what you all are saying, like who's doing the training? How are we making sure residents in the city are getting these?
Absolutely.
Why are we pulling in people from the suburbs and telling them to live in the city? It doesn't make any sense. We work as elected representatives of the people in the city now, not of future citizens that might be wealthy.
Absolutely.
Folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. You just heard Ian Schlockman, who's running for the 12th District City Council seat, as a Green Party candidate, Shannon Wright, who's running for Baltimore City Council president, and Joshua Harris, who is a mayoral candidate on the Green Party ticket, and Shannon is running as a Republican, 410-319-8888. These are their ideas about where they want to help take the city. What are your ideas and thoughts for them? Join us at 410-319-8888. And Michael, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
My concern is my wife and I just bought a home in Baltimore County in June.
Mm-hmm.
While we were house hunting, we saw a lot of homes in Baltimore City we really, really liked. Really liked. But would not bid on because of the high taxes on those homes. $3,000, $3,500, $4,000, $4,500, $5,000 taxes. And you know when you buy a home, the taxes are included in your mortgage payment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can't afford it. You can't afford it. And I haven't heard one candidate yet talk about lowering taxes on homes.
Did you want to buy in the city?
It's too late. I wanted to, yes. Yes, I really did. You know, some of the homes we saw were beautiful. But, you know, the taxes was just too high.
I think that is a really – this has been a debating point for a long time. Mm-hmm. So you – one of the ways the city gets its revenues, mm-hmm, is from property taxes.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
Right? And so you lower the property taxes in Baltimore, and you cut off the revenue for the city. People say you can expand that because more people will buy houses, but that's a maybe. Mm-hmm. So, and we right now have a property tax system that's divided by city, Baltimore City, and all the counties in the state, everyone having their own individual tax rate. Mm-hmm. So what is Baltimore to do? What would it mean if you just cut the property tax rate by an eighth, a tenth, a third, a quarter, a half, or whatever that number might be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so what? How do you respond to a system like this, Ian?
Yeah, we absolutely. I'm a socialist. I'm just putting that out there, right? And other socialists that have run for city council, like Kashama Sawant, all the way out in Seattle, actually, we recognize this issue that working class people, poor to working class people, have middle class people even too, have a very hard time affording homes in urban areas because of the high property taxes. So I actually would be for lowering the property tax, believe it or not. But that's not to say we're lowering it for everyone. We're lowering it on working class folks. We're lowering it on poor folks. We're lowering it on retirees on a fixed income. There's a number of different groups I'd like to see us lower the property tax for. I'd also like to see us lower the property tax for lower taxes in general for small businesses, and lower fines for small businesses as well. Small businesses out there, I'm a small business owner. You know, Shannon, I'm sure you're a small business owner too. The fines that they levy in the city are just incredible. If you don't have the right size windows, they give you a fine. If you want to put an A-frame outside, they give you a fine. I mean, you know, for me as a socialist to be saying the taxes are too high and the burden on small businesses is too much, you got to know there's a problem, right? I mean, this is a real thing.
Shannon, right, as a Republican candidate, what are you going to say?
Well, you know, the Republican stance is, of course, lower taxes. So. But, you know, there are very few folks voting in this election that remember when the last Republican was elected in Baltimore City. So
Theodore McKeldin, if I remember correctly, was the last mayor we had that was a Republican.
So it's been a while. Taxes are certainly an issue. You know, you do have to balance the revenue that the city needs to function and grow versus how much you go in the residents' pockets. Now, my pockets live here in Baltimore. I don't particularly care for other folks deciding how much of my money needs to come out of my pocket. So I do understand your concern. I think that taxes should certainly be lowered. I think that especially for people that are willing to invest here in Baltimore, there should be incentives. If we can look at $660 million for a TIF, for a developer that can afford to do this without our assistance, we should certainly be looking to help ordinary, everyday folk that are looking to be in this city.
Joshua Harris.
Yes, that's actually a great question. And this is probably, I don't want to say one of the rare things, but the reality is that I consider myself a fiscal Republican. I believe we should be fiscally responsible and manage our money.
Welcome, Josh.
And I'm totally for cutting property taxes. In fact, in my vision, in my platform, the first phase that we released, our economic development platform, we specifically have a section on how we're going to cut property taxes in half. We were going to cut because right now we know that Baltimore City's tax rate is 2 times higher than the other surrounding counties. And so the goal is to cut the property tax rate in half by increasing the wealth of the citizens of Baltimore and bringing to market functional assets, which are now currently 40,000-plus vacant homes in our house. So if we're able to do that, as well as move towards public banking, which is a staple, of course, of my platform, we can leverage and create more wealth in the city, and we'll be able to cut the property tax rate in half within 7 years. And so we specifically go into that. My website is harrisforbaltimore.com. You can see it on the vision page, and there's details about how we're going to cut the property taxes in half. But it's possible. Not only is it possible to do it, but it's also possible to put the people of Baltimore to work and bring them, give them the ability to know what it feels like to be a homeowner.
Absolutely.
Because they're earning a living wage, and they can provide for their families. And that's what we're not seeing. And so when it comes back to all this talk about property taxes, it comes back to really investing in people first and making sure that we're giving people the ability to earn a living wage and provide for their families. Because then, when you're no longer trying to survive, you can think about the luxuries of life, which it is a luxury to become a homeowner. But we all deserve it. And we can make sure that we're working to ensure that Baltimoreans have access to do just that and become homeowners in our city. And so property taxes is definitely a priority of my administration, which is why I was in the first release of my platform, our economic portion. And definitely something that I'm committing to doing and lowering the property taxes in the city.
Let's go back to the phones. Appreciate that call, Kenneth. 410-319-8888. Let's go to who's next. Is it Rebecca? You're next. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me on your show.
Good morning.
I listen to your show all the time.
Thank you.
Thank God for you. I just wanted to say I live in Locust Point, and I live right there by Under Armour. And I don't really even think that they're going to employ that many people. And the people they're going, all the people that work at Under Armour, I see them every day. They just come in from the suburbs. They all come from the suburbs. I talk to them. I don't think that there's really going to be any jobs at all at the Sagamore Development for any people from the city, people of color, nothing. It's just not going to happen. And my last comment, and I'll take it off the air.
Sure.
Nursing homes. We have no real nursing homes. We don't really have any nursing homes in the city. All the nursing homes suck. Well, what's going to happen? Why can't they put a nursing home in there, too, and do like a Swedish model where they're having young people live with poor people, with rich people, you know, all in a mixed development. But we'll never see that money.
Rebecca, thanks for that call and your comment. We'll come back to our guests here with their comments after this quick break. We're going to take on the way to break. And let me see, we have Sue in Morning Sunday. We're going to get to your calls as well when we come back. We are here with Ian Schlockman, Shannon Wright, Joshua Harris, all running for offices here in Baltimore City in this election. On the way there, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Or SteinerShow.org is the banner of the Maryland State Education Association. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here as we look at the future of our city, as we'll be doing every week with people who are running for political office in the city. We are joined by Joshua Harris, who is the Green Party candidate for mayor, Shannon Wright is the Republican Party's candidate for Baltimore City Council President. Ian Schlockman is Green Party candidate for City Council in the 12th District. And you all are 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in. 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. And I'm going to ask a question here about public safety issues and education. I want to get to those things before we get out of here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Morning Sunday. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, hi.
Good morning.
I was one of the people who sued the state of Maryland in a landmark case that allowed people like Joshua Harris to run for office on the ticket. Because prior to that, only Republicans and Democrats could run for office. So I'm really proud to hear him and the other candidate from the Green Party. I feel like a mother who gave birth.
Thank you.
Morning, Sunday. Thank you so much. However, it wasn't as painful as that, though. Not that I've ever given birth, but just had to throw that up. Morning, Sunday. Well, always good to hear from you. I do remember the lawsuit, and it was really important to kind of expand. We have to do that now in our expand the base of who's going to be on the ballot so people can see that. But now we have to expand these debates and make sure that everybody gets in these debates and then maybe we can get Absolutely. Our president of city council to actually debate the people who are running for that office
that
along
wonderful.
With them. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Sue. You're on the air. Welcome.
I just wanted to say something about the real estate taxes and just real estate costs. I think the problem now is that the city has a great reliance on real estate for its revenue, and that forces it to gouge people every way they can. The way they did the water increase, for example, is just really crazy. It was like a foregone deal made by, you know, five people without proper input. But I think there needs to be a structural change. I mean, if people are not working, you can't tax incomes. And if people don't have income, they can't really buy houses. And that's why you see so many abandoned houses all over the place. And then the city system, which would allow people to make a change, just doesn't work because you have too many irresponsible, say, city councilmen or other public officials, and then they've already made their decisions, so you're not supposed to be able to do anything anyway. As for the person who was complaining about is the real estate taxes were too high, I would just say as an aside, yes, there is a process whereby if you're a homeowner, you're living in the property, your taxes would be significantly reduced. But again, to go through that procedure, it's really unnecessarily lengthy because the system doesn't work. So I would like to see whoever would come into office to deal with that broken system and to really address. I mean, that's why it becomes so important when you give all these tax breaks to get Under Armour or whomever mm-hmm. to come into the city, because you lose that as a source of taxes, and then you are again forced to gouge people who own the houses in Baltimore that are left occupied and have not been abandoned.
So appreciate the call. I mean, it's a very thoughtful response to all that. And I think that that is one of the problems. You know, Josh Harris, I heard what you said when we first, the issue first came up today. But, I mean, if we didn't have that property tax revenue, the city's coffers would be emptied. You know, I mean, so Baltimore's coffers between a rock and a hard place.
Well, if you rethink the whole paradigm on your development deals so that the city actually can receive and see a benefit and a reward, a fiscal benefit, not 10 years down the line, but now, then you wouldn't have to rest so much weight on the shoulders of the citizens of the city.
What are you going to say? Joshua, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Joshua Harris, and I just want to touch, too, I think it's extremely important that we understand that the reason that we end up footing this bill is directly connected to, as well, Wall Street. So when we heard Senator Sanders talk about Wall Street, how it impacts our lives nationally, it impacts us locally, knowing that right now Baltimore City And we touch on this in my public banking platform, that our $2.7 billion operating budget is sitting in the bank on Wall Street. And that bank is using it to make investments and make its investors and CEOs rich and wealthy, while the city sees no return on that. In fact, we then go up to Wall Street like we're about to do for Under Armour, and we take out municipal bonds, where in some cases in Baltimore, we're paying upwards of 15% interest on some of those muni bonds. Whereas if we were to remove our budget from that Wall Street bank and open up our own Baltimore City Public Bank, we can leverage it and make the exact same investments. But now every penny earned comes back to the citizens of Baltimore. And we can say that we want 40% of all interest earned to go directly towards making sure that our children can drink the water and that they have heat in the wintertime and air conditioning in the summer. We can say we want another 40% to go directly towards training people to do the work to repair our vacant housing market, our vacant houses in the city. And it builds wealth within the city, and we can then float our own bonds because we have the capital that we're always bringing in revenue each year. So if we leverage that, we can take control of our economic future and really build a city that works for all of us and revitalize our local economy.
So let me switch gears here a minute, but we're going to come to your calls. William and Sergeant Freeman are going to get to both your calls and those coming in at 410-319-8888. So stay with me. I just want to raise another issue here. We've had 206 murders in Baltimore this year. From what I've been reading, maybe four or five times as many people who have been shot, and many more times those people who have had violence thrust upon them by other citizens in the city. We've seen the report that came out by the DOJ that was pretty damning when it came to the police department's interaction with citizens. But you also have read that in the No Boundaries Coalition report that came out before that, that really told the story from individuals' stories throughout the west side of Baltimore. And you saw David Troy's piece in The Sun, maybe you saw it, his editorial, where he was saying, yes, maybe it's time to abolish the police department and start over. So the question is, and the clearance rate for murders in this town is abysmally low, mm-hmm. as opposed to places like Philly, which have turned around how they deal with police community relations in ways that have helped to alter that. So you're in office. What do you propose to do as you're running for office to address this problem, which really affects hundreds of thousands of people directly in the city every day?
Well, I can say this. If we don't fix the problem of public safety, nothing else will really matter. You have to feel comfortable. You have to feel safe knowing that when you send your children to school in the morning, you're going to see them home in the afternoon. You have to feel safe that when you are able to get a job, that once you get to that job, you'll be able to get back home safe in the evening. That has to be a priority. They're doing all sorts of statistics. I was hearing about the rates in Chicago and the rates in other cities and how the actual number of murders is less in Baltimore, but because of the population, the rate is actually higher here. Something has to be done about that. I mean, if you read for anyone that actually read the Department of Justice report, that was a lot of information. But if you live in Baltimore, not much of it was a surprise. It just wasn't. So the question then becomes, how do you fix it? It didn't happen overnight, and unless the city runs into a windfall, it's not going to get fixed overnight. But there are some glaring issues that really need to be addressed with the police department.
Ian Schlockman.
I mean, to look at the police as an entity to themselves, I mean, I'd be in city council, right? So one of my main goals that I have to take care of is community police relations. And right now, especially on the east side, they are atrociously bad, the community police relations, and rightfully so. I mean, the DOJ report followed by the consent decree kind of tells us all we need to know. There are some terrible racist officers out there who the community simply doesn't want patrolling their streets. So they don't call. They don't work with the police. And I hear this all the time. I'll go knock on someone's door, and the first person says the police are harassing me and my family. And the next person I talk to on the next door, we've knocked about 7,000 doors so far, so especially on the east side, this is very typical. The police don't come when I call. And over and over and over again, you see the police are in the community, but they're not coming when they call 911, but they're in the community, but they're not coming when they call 911. Now, I know, because I've been to so many community association meetings and I've talked to the police officers and the majors directly, that there are some dedicated people out there that are trying to fix that dynamic. But you're never going to get it fixed unless you have effective leadership in city council that is actively picking up the phone every day and making sure when there is a murder, when there is a stabbing, when there is some kind of altercation, when there is an issue happening in the district, you have to be, I have to be, that liaison between the police. And the other thing that I'm promoting that is kind of systemic, but I think it's worth talking about, is the idea of community control of police. Now, a lot of neighborhoods across the country talk about community control of police, but what I'm talking about is literally a community association can say, this officer in our district is harassing children, is out of control, is not responding to 911 calls. We do not want this officer in our district, in our neighborhood anymore. And they have the ability to request another officer from the city and say that officer is no longer welcome in our neighborhood. I think that would go a long way. I like what David Troy is talking about. I understand the sentiment. I understand the feeling of just hitting the reset button. But I think the idea of neighborhoods actually being able to say you're not allowed on our streets anymore if you continue this conduct would be far more effective than hitting the reset button on the whole police force. That's my two cents. But I respect David Troy's opinion for that. I love his article.
Joshua Harris, and then we'll open the phones.
Yeah, no, I think that to touch on the police component of it, one, understanding, of course, that policing in itself is a reactive measure. We need to make sure that we're putting something in place to hold officers accountable so that they foot the bill when they are found to be in violation, when they are found in the wrong, that it's not the citizens of Baltimore that are footing that bill any longer, but those officers to hold themselves accountable is one of the main priorities. But beyond that, understanding that, yes, violence is an issue in Baltimore, but it didn't happen overnight. Understanding that this is a history that has put things in place and set things rolling in motion to perpetuate poverty and disparity when 100 years ago someone drew on a map with a red pen and said, black people can only live here. We're not going to put anything here or here that they have access to. Understanding what poverty has done in Baltimore City, and that is at the root cause of the violence and the crime, knowing that the majority of our violence in the city is driven by a thriving drug trade. Why? Because there's no other sense, no other options for employment in a blue-collar town that has been without blue-collar work since Bethlehem Steel left. Knowing that many of these kids on the corner would walk away gladly for just $12 an hour. So when we really begin to look at, and this is what my plan and vision talks about, how we work towards raising the median family household income by bringing industry back to Baltimore City, putting hundreds of thousands of Baltimoreans back to work, and changing this blue-collar town from a blue-collar town into a green-collar town, we can become the clean energy manufacturing and production hub for the entire Eastern Seaboard if we are proactive and committed to investing in the citizens of Baltimore so that they can give back to our city.
You know, I agree with a lot of the principles of what Joshua just said, but I think we need to take it further than that and start with things that we can do now, and then in a couple of months, and then a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan. Because again, as I've said, and as was repeated by other candidates here, we didn't get in this situation overnight, and it's not going to get fixed overnight. Now, again, I commented on the Department of Justice report, but there are two sides to this. Now, we have some officers that are not the type we would want ourselves or our children to cross on a dark night, granted. However, we have a lot of officers that are the types of officers that we are happy to have on the police force. We have to find a way for the police and communities to be able to have some sort of a meeting of the minds. When things happen, whether it's a shooting, whether it's a robbery, whether it's retaliation, whatever it is, even if you're upset with the police, in a lot of cases, the first thing you do is call the police. So you're angry with the folks that you have to call to be able to help when there's a situation. We have to come to a way of not only fixing the technical issues and the issues of, you know, the physical things that need to be fixed, whether it's the 911 calling system, whether it's equipment that the officers have, but we actually have to fix the communication between the officers and the community so that there is trust. Trust is what is going to be key to rebuilding that relationship between the police and the community on both sides.
Open the phones again as we're talking to three people who are running for office here in the city of Baltimore. You just heard Shannon Wright, Republican candidate for the Baltimore City Council presidency, Joshua Harris, Green Party mayoral candidate, and Ian Schlockman, candidate for the city council in the 12th district, which is an open seat, I would say. Somebody new will be in that seat.
Kind of. Yeah, well, when we win, it will be.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to William. You've been holding on a while. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good welcome to you. Good day to you and your guests. Concerning the TIF system, we recycle everything. We recycle garbage, recycle plastic, but we don't recycle money. So I was thinking if the city would use the TIF program, connect with the universities, the colleges, get the engineers, the architects, the urban developers, get them all involved because many of them live in the city. They have a direct interest and get a development plan from them. You'll be able to filter a lot of ideas, not the ideas just from one or two or three people. That way the money could be recycled, goes back into university, it helps educate the children, the professors or whatever, and the city gets a real dynamic development, which can go for year after year. Because I was in London a couple years ago, and they had the London Eye. They put it up there temporarily, and it was so popular that they kept it. And then when I'm driving across, I came from Virginia 2 days ago, driving over the bridge, and I looked to the right, and there's a version of the London Eye. Somebody picked an idea that's dynamic, that something that's sustainable, that, you know, you put it out there as an experiment, and it's like, wow, it really works. People like it. Let's keep it going. So I'm thinking with the TIF, they should do something like that. And as far as the banking goes, our money is printed at the Treasury. We really don't need an outside banker. We should just bank with the United States Treasury because they're the one that, you know, create the green stuff, you know. So and your interest rate would be very low. I mean, it's probably like 1% or some ridiculous amount.
Right, right.
That way you're not gambling with Wall Street because up and down, you know, you're dealing directly with the Treasury, you know. And that way your credibility, everything is based in your relationship directly with the Treasury.
William, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate your
you're
thoughts.
You're welcome, sir.
And let's get another call in here, and then we'll come back to our panelists, 410-319-8888. Sergeant Freeman, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody.
Hello.
And by the way, I'm Sergeant Military ex. I'm retired.
Okay.
And I've been studying something that people are missing the boat on. If you take an existing program, when I'm speaking about violence, I was going to speak about the real estate situation, whereas they gave people like Clancy and other rich people all these tax breaks, and they never really paid any tax. I think that came out in the Baltimore Sun a few years ago.
Right.
Still don't know where that went, but they're willing to take people's water bills of, you know, poor people, but yet the water bills for these corporations, they never, I don't know if they took care of that either. I think Councilman Stokes was dealing with that at one point. But anyway, when Sandy Hook happened, I'm getting to the violence, when Sandy Hook occurred in 2014, if you study that particular area in the United States, in Connecticut and Massachusetts, since 2003, they had an actual cooperative program where the police and law enforcement was in cooperation with clinicians and the medical center, University of Mass General Hospital. And then when Sandy Hook happened, they had a program already happening where they had a gun buyback program, and then they were able to track the actual violence and the collateral damage to the people that surround any type of violence. And then they were able to reduce the homicide, the suicide, and a whole bunch of other things. But the number one thing is they had cooperation with law enforcement and everybody. And just so happens that when the Sandy Hook thing happened in 2014, they already had a program that was functional for nearly, you know, 15, 16 years. And they were able to raise money every year on the gun buyback program. People just turned in their guns. The number one problem, I think, with President Obama when he went to prison is he had 2.3 people in prison, male, that have children, anywhere from 2 to 3 children. And then the violent death that happened to Dwayne Wade's cousin, those two knuckleheads were just let out of jail just recently. So if you don't get into the systemic generational aspect of things by having programs like that particular one in Sandy Hook area, then you're always going to have this systemic issue, and nobody really addresses that. It's not about the cops. It's not about that. It's dealing with those two knucklehead children that killed that woman, and what if the woman herself, which Dwayne Wade has a ton of money, but she has left now 4 children that don't have a mother. But what if one of those kids, you know, goes south in terms of violence and whatever, that will turn into one of those also kids that would be repetitive in prison as okay. well? That's my comment.
Appreciate it. And so let's go back then kind of, I think in many ways, both the question of development mm-hmm. and crime in our town are really interrelated. It's hard to separate them if we think about mm-hmm. them holistically.
Yeah. I think I want to
Joshua Harris.
I think I'd like to touch on two things really quickly on that. And one is understand the importance of mental illness, or the actual opposite of mental wellness. And so understanding the mental component and the trauma that we deal with in our communities every day, the violence we see on TV and movies and video games, has desensitized us to the value of life, and that is not mentally well. That is not total wellness. And so when we talk about building totally well communities, making sure that there's a component in there that's included, providing services and spaces for people to go and talk and be able to communicate and deal with the trauma that so many of our young people in particular face every single day in our communities in Baltimore is a priority. If we're talking about building communities that are mentally well, physically well, spiritually well, emotionally well, and educationally well, as well as civically well and being civically engaged, totally well communities is definitely a priority. And so wraparound services is the focus for that. And he spoke to the issue of violence now, and I don't think it's a secret. I'm originally from Chicago, which is a city that has led the country in violence for several years now, and Baltimore is a smaller version than that, and some would say maybe even more violent. Knowing that 75% of felony crimes are committed by individuals who have prior interaction with the law. And so to me what that says is that if we want to have an immediate impact on crime reduction in our city, we have to focus on preventing offenders from reoffending. That means we have to break this cycle of an individual gets in trouble, they go to jail, they get out of jail, they can't get a job now because they've been to jail, so they end up going back to the streets, and then they get in trouble again. We have to break that cycle and focus on preventing offenders from reoffending. And that means ensuring that as soon as they come out, we're providing them with resources to get sustainable employment immediately. Mm-hmm. So that we aren't breaking the cycle, we're not seeing someone go back because they've gone back to the streets. Yeah, there's people who, I'd say a small group of people who they live that lifestyle, but the majority of individuals want a second chance and an opportunity to provide for their families. That's all. And so we have to make sure we're providing those wraparound services and programs to our returned citizens immediately to ensure that we're not sending them directly back into the cycle.
Shannon Wright?
You could see I was kind of chomping at the bit to comment here. So I understand what's just been said here. I'm a mom of four, okay? There's a phrase that my kids understood from when they were little. Don't start none, won't be none. And I'm the biggest enemy you could ever have, scarier than anything you'll find out there on that street, okay? So, yes, we do need to have programs that keep our recidivism down. Yes, we most assuredly do. But we need to stop the issues before it becomes an issue. Let's marinate on that for a minute. We need, there are some things that going into council, you have to understand. Some things can be legislated and some things can't. One of the things we need that unfortunately can't be legislated is for parents to understand the concept of being parents. That's one thing. We need parents that understand how to be parents. We need churches that understand how to be churches. And when I say that, what I mean is this. A lot of the problems that we see that comes to school with the children are things that should be addressed outside of the schools. So when we've talked today about Port Covington, we've talked today about the homicide rate in Baltimore City, we've talked a little bit about education, but if you tie this, it's all interconnected. My issue with Port Covington is not Sagamore Development. My issue with Port Covington is the leadership of the city having mm-hmm. a proven track record of getting into deals that do not benefit the citizens of the city. So yeah. When you look at that, then that means you don't have the job market that you should have. You don't have the education resources that you should have. So then what you have is the pharmaceutical distribution that you have and you don't want. So if we were to fix some of the things in terms of education and be able to give children a correct path to be able to stay on and the actual resources to be able to stay there, we wouldn't have to talk so much about a homicide rate. We wouldn't have to talk so much about recidivism because people would be less inclined to do the things they know they shouldn't be doing when they have options that are viable mm-hmm. that every parent would like to see for their children.
Ian Schlockman, then we'll wrap it up here.
I mean, so many issues we're talking about are just systemic issues, and they come back to racial justice, economic justice, people just not being served, especially on the East and West Side. And so many of that, a huge chunk of that East Side is in my district. I mean, you know, I one of the reasons I started to run was because of my just hatred of the Baltimore Development Corporation. I think I've come on the show before, maybe even talked about it. That is an organization that focuses exclusively on making sure that wealthy, large, multinational companies can come into the city and exploit us, basically. They get free land. They give reduced they will cut you a deal if you are a large multinational corporation like they did Amazon and other big companies that you will never see as a small business or as an individual, a citizen just trying to own a home and raise a family here in the city. So our priorities are all screwed up in the city. There's really no way around that. And, you know, as a city councilor, you know, there are certain things that I know. I kind of like Shannon's idea of like 1-3-5, you know, like first year in office, here's the things that I could take care of. $15 an hour minimum wage. I think that systemically will help heal a lot of problems going on in the city right here, right away. $15 an hour minimum wage would be enormous benefit for a lot of working families in our city, especially those on the west, on the east side of my district that really desperately need it the most. I think that you're going to see simple issues, too, that affect people's property values, like vacant homes next door that aren't being addressed by code enforcement, buildings falling down in Midway in my area that are just crumbling to the ground right near outside of like Cecil Elementary School. My team stood outside and made sure code enforcement came and got that building, you know, cordoned off. And then we waited to see that it was demolished over the next couple weeks. I mean, these issues seem small, but as a city councilor, these are the things that I could do that will make sure that those people next door will not have to worry about their property values plummeting or their kids being hit by some kind of falling brick coming off a building. I mean, these are important issues, but they're small issues.
They're huge issues,
they're
really.
Huge. Yeah, when you tie them all together, and they're all interconnected.
Yeah, yeah, and I think this is a big, great conversation because we're going up and we're going down. You know, I mean, we need to address all of it.
And I want to thank all the three of you for being here. And before we wrap it up, I want to remind Melissa just tweeted in, our coffers wouldn't necessarily be empty without property tax cut. With a property tax cut, we spend $500 million on policing. We lack audits. So our final thought from a listener. Who tweeted that in. Thank you so much for that thought. Ian Schlockman, Green Party candidate for the 12th District. Good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Coming out to my rally October 11th.
Okay. And
Area 405.
Okay, gotcha.
7 p.m.
Shannon Wright, Republican candidate for Baltimore City Council President. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, and I hope to be back again. We've got a lot of stuff to do, a lot of work to finish to be able to fix Baltimore and get it back on the right track.
Joshua Harris, Green Party mayoral candidate. Thank you so much once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And for those interested, we're having a big Get Out to Vote rally on Friday the 16th at the Downtown Cultural Arts Center at 7 p.m. And presidential candidate Jill Stein will be in town for us.
Joshua, thank you. And I want to thank you all for being here. It's been a great discussion. We're up against the clock.
Thank you, Mark.
I want to remind folks, tomorrow at the White House is a protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline at 5 p.m. People standing in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Nation and all nation, Indian nations around the country who are there. You can get rides and ask questions at Deidre, D-E-I-D-R-E, at 350.org. That's the number 350. And we'll be covering that with some intensity here on Wednesday. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Armani Spence. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk at steinershow.org. To podcast the show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or use your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.